Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Women in Agile podcast. I am your host, Renee Craven, and today I speak to Sarah Skold. Having spent most of her career in human resources and learning and development, Sarah came across Agile as a philosophy and a way of working, and she loved it. She jumped ship and moved into a customer experience team working in Agile and has now become a Scrum Master and a practice lead. In this episode, Sarah and I talk about the art of asking dumb questions and how modeling that helps others to feel more confident to ask their own dumb questions. We hope you enjoy. Sarah, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Renee. It's nice to chat to you again.
Yes, it's been a little while. But yes, it's nice to speak one-on-one, and I'm very keen to learn a little bit more about you outside of the context of the ethics podcast that we recorded last time we spoke. To kick things off, can you please share with our listeners how you found Agile?
Yes. So I began my career in HR, and most, I guess why I was interested in HR and decided to take a career down that path was my dad was an investment banker, and he'd be working on a lot of mergers and acquisitions. And I'd always just found it really fascinating how you could merge two companies or sell off a chunk of a company. And then, you know, he would be like, right, done. And I would be like, but what happens now? And so I kind of thought that HR was, you know, going to give me that sort of exposure, I guess, to how people work together in teams. And I just always was fascinated with sort of groups of people and how they interact with each other. So went into HR, you know, spent a lot of time in a few different roles. I suppose I kind of was still looking for that thing that helped me to really work directly with teams and understand how teams were interacting together and support them to do that in a more productive way. I was in HR for about 12 years. My last role was in learning and development. So I did probably get the most exposure to that in that role. And I was doing some sort of team building sessions with teams and also working in the leadership capability space. But again, I just kind of felt like I didn't have, you know, I'd see these teams once and then give them some guidance, but I wasn't sort of in the team and I couldn't see what impact I was having. And I kind of mentioned that to a friend. And I think at the same time, in one of my, you know, HR things that I was doing, you always get lists and lists of people and job titles. And this job title Scrum Master came up and I was like, what the heck is a Scrum Master? And I come from kind of a big rugby family, two brothers that played rugby. And so I kind of was like, oh, that sounds like an interesting concept. And I guess I'd always kind of felt that the alignment with how teams, sport teams work together and work teams work together was always fascinating as well. And, you know, should I maybe be going down a sport team coaching route? So, the idea of a Scrum Master kind of interested me. And I think I was talking about it with some friends, and one of my friends worked at a big telco and she was working in Agile. And so she kind of told me all about it. And she said, yeah, Sarah, I think this would be a really, you know, good space for you. And I can really see you enjoying working like this and helping teams. You know, we have a Scrum Master and Agile coach, and I think you'd be great at it. So I was like, okay, well, it sounds interesting. And then I was taking some long service leave from my HR job, and I just thought I'd, you know, maybe try and find something a little bit different. We in the leadership development space had been doing a fair bit on human-centered design and you know, how to bring that into the workplace. And a role came up in our retail bank that was around kind of teaching people that. So, you know, stuff that I'd been doing already. And also doing a lot of user research, a lot of user interviews, and in, you know, HR, you do spend a lot of time interviewing. So I kind of combined those two skills and moved into this, it was kind of a UX team, internal consulting team. And we sat next to the lead Agile coach, and he was just awesome. And I think you know who I'm talking about. And he just really kind of ignited that interest in me. And I had, you know, like he was right there sitting next to me and I could ask him a million questions, and he was just always willing to share. And I ended up becoming the Scrum Master for that team. And yeah, the rest is history.
Lovely. Yes, we love people who are curious.
Yeah, exactly. Oh man, we had a lot of chats at work that were not related to work at all, but it was all really interesting stuff.
Yes, beautiful. Wow, that's a really interesting story. Like, you've got all those different backgrounds, with even with your brothers who played rugby, you know, that kind of, you've got the scrum context as well. So
yeah,
that's cool. What have you observed about the role of women in the Agile community over the years?
So coming from HR, I've kind of been, I guess, in a women-dominated area for a long time, although working in a bank, the rest of the organization was definitely more male. And so I think you kind of notice some of those differences, quite starkly. And from what I can see in my observation, I think Agile does kind of play to some of the things that you might, perceive as the average woman's strengths, particularly around, kind of empathy and like really being curious and interested in going into the reasons why someone might be behaving or feeling a certain way. And probably also around that transparency and kind of willingness to be vulnerable and maybe to pivot and learn a little bit. And I think then one of the really big things, and coming from a banking kind of background, you see this a lot, is that like status is very important to some men. And being the smart person and feeling like you know all the answers is maybe sort of more of a male characteristic. So for women, I think that Agile kind of plays to the opposite of that, and to removing that status and to having to being willing to look a bit silly. I thought it was really interesting. Actually, I just mentioned to my husband that I was doing this at lunchtime, and he said, "Oh, well, I hope you've got something smart to say." And I was like, "Well, that's a kind of a male attitude."
Yeah.
I don't know if I have something smart to say, but hopefully, people will learn something from the conversation. So, yeah, I think that it does play to a woman's strength, being able to kind of be exposed and not and feel like that's a safe environment.
Mm. Yeah. So that brings us, I think, nicely to your topic today, which is why asking a dumb question is a superpower.
Yes.
Why did you choose that as your topic today?
Well, I was kind of thinking about, your question around what I've observed about women in Agile. And I think that one of the things that I do observe is that women are more willing to ask questions and make sure that they have a solid understanding. And not only that they have a solid understanding, but that there is a common understanding across the group of people that are working on a problem. And I had in this organization that I'm working in now, I had the pleasure of working with one lady who was only there briefly, in and out in a year or something, but she really had a big impact on me, and she always used to say, "This might be a dumb question, but blah blah blah," and she would ask it. And I really think that her just being part of those conversations and asking those questions made such a big impact on the teams and the way that they, the solutions that they came up with, and the speed at which they were able to get to that common understanding. So I kind of, even though she left, I sort of took that on as, I'm going to bring that superpower in and try to be the person that asks the dumb question. Not that it's dumb. No question is really dumb, but it's almost like it diffuses the situation. It just saying that, "Hey, this might be a dumb question," it reduces the person who you're asking the question. It reduces their sort of, tension or nervousness around your question, because they're not, seeing it as feedback or a criticism of them. They, you're putting yourself out there and being vulnerable. So I think kind of just, the term, "Oh, this might be a dumb question," actually does kind of just really diffuse a lot of situations.
Mm.
So yeah, that's why I was interested to talk about it today.
Nice. So you're, when you find yourself wanting to ask a question and you start with a, and this might be a dumb question, but do you find that the questions you ask are usually the questions that others also want to know the answer to, but don't ask the question?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, I've been in this role, the Scrum Master role, for 2 years. And before that, I'd never really worked in the tech space at all. So I was, you know, working in a development team, you know, building digital platforms. I really did have a lot of dumb questions because I just didn't know what they were talking about. And there's a lot of language that just didn't make sense to me. So partly, you know, it was actually stuff that I really needed to ask and understand. And other people in the room probably did have a good enough understanding about it. But I don't think that means that they don't get something out of listening to the explanation or even being the person that gives the explanation. Having to really simplify something that you're working on and make it easy for someone who isn't technical to understand can really bring some insights to that individual as well. So even if everyone else in the room did understand, I think that, you know, it was adding value. Or it does add value to ask a dumb question. I mean, obviously, you've got to kind of be careful with time, and probably that's one of my my downfalls as a Scrum Master is I'm not the best timekeeper in the world because I tend to go down, oh, I really want to understand this, like really, really need to understand this. But yeah, I think that it still adds value even if other people do understand. And then, yes, there's definitely been situations where you can just tell that nobody else understands what's going on. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, probably a lot around that sort of not wanting to lose face or reduce their status, people don't ask the question. And yeah, when I ask a dumb question, it does, you see a lot of nods and a lot of like, oh, yes, yes, you know, that good question sort of thing. So yeah, I think there's a spectrum. Obviously, sometimes, you know, when I ask a dumb question, I know the answer to the question. I just want to help the person repeat it again or say it in a different way for their own understanding or other people's understanding. And then sometimes I genuinely don't know the answer and, you know, maybe I'm the only one in the room that doesn't.
I was just thinking that recently, I think it was even yesterday, I was in a meeting and we were trying to get the team across the plan of, you know, when the thing that we're building is going to be released and things like that. And I was asking questions I knew the answer to, but just so that the team, because you get a lot of, it's really hard these days with the online-ness of teams as well. And you get a lot of silence and kind of maybe some nods if you're lucky, but normally just can't, if the cameras are on at all, just they kind of just sit there still and you kind of can gauge that they're not quite grasping or they don't know what's going on or they're not 100% sure, but they're also not comfortable asking questions. So I often find myself, yesterday especially, I was asking questions that I knew the answer to, but I was just hoping and trying to help build that common understanding, that shared understanding within the team.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you touched on something there around, you know, they don't have confidence to ask a question or they don't feel comfortable. Often once you ask a few dumb questions, then all the other questions start to come. So. People, it is kind of a superpower in that it actually just enables other people to ask any questions that they might have because you open the gate to the questioning and they've been able to observe how did that person respond to a question? Were they upset about a question? Am I going to get attacked if I ask a question? So they've kind of had a bit of an example in front of them.
A few years ago, I would always say whenever I asked a question, didn't matter what forum I was in, I would always say this might be a dumb question, but, and I'd ask my question until someone said to me, you need to stop saying that because your questions are never dumb. They're good questions. So just ask your question. Don't sound like you're doubting yourself before you even ask the question. So I took that advice on board. I'm just trying to think now. I don't even know if I still do it sometimes. Maybe I still do it sometimes, but I had to kind of work on dropping that because. I think it was a confidence thing. I was never someone who grew up, like at school, I never asked questions. I would be the quiet little person just doing what they had to do. But I never really was the person always answering questions or asking questions. And I wonder if that's part of why I felt, I was always questioning myself whether, is this a stupid question or is this a good question? Should I ask this question or shouldn't I ask this question? So I'd always go, this might be dumb.
Yeah. I guess there's two sides to, whether or not it's the right thing to say at the beginning of a question. I've wondered whether it's politically correct to use the word dumb and all that kind of stuff.
That's true.
It seems to work for me, I think, to say it out loud, but I can certainly see how, if it is undermining your confidence or making other people think you're undermining your confidence, then that's not a good thing either. I think in my teams and the organizations that I work with, people are just like, here she goes again with her dumb question. But they all know that I'm not actually dumb. So it's okay. but yeah, I think that it is interesting. Also, sometimes those questions that I try to ask simple questions, not, the sort of like really fancy, sometimes you can be like, so you said this and this and this and this, and so my assumption is blah, blah, blah. And so blah, this is my question. And the person's just standing there going, what are you talking about? And plus also that means you've spent like the last 2 minutes of what that person was saying, trying to think about how to make your question sound smart.
So true.
Which is not useful for either you or them. I definitely was probably similar at school, and certainly in university, I'd sit back and be like, oh gosh, I'm not putting my hand up in front of this lecture of 100 people and, saying something that isn't, a really intelligent question.
Yeah.
But now I try to kind of use the, would my grandma understand this? Would my children understand this? When I'm talking to my teams, and try to get them just to be that simple. So the questions that I'm asking, I'm hoping to try to uncover that, level of granularity. Like, how can, someone walk past our story on our board and actually understand what is going on here?
Yeah.
It's interesting working with kids as well, because I do that primary school ethics teaching that we spoke about on the other podcast.
Yeah.
And so I spend an hour a week, or half an hour a week it is actually, with kids where we talk about different topics, and it's a curriculum that's planned and written up by an organization, but it's really interesting topics, and the idea of it is really to get the kids asking lots of questions and asking questions not of me but of each other and learning from each other. We try to think about how best to phrase questions and how to kind of keep a conversation flowing by using questions, which I think is a pretty useful skill.
Yeah, absolutely.
For kids as well.
Absolutely. I was laughing before when you were explaining, we were talking about the person who has to ask all of the background and takes ages to actually get to their actual question and uses big words. And I have a regular book club, and one of the book that we're just finished reading actually, the author uses lots of big words in the sentence in the book, and I've said, oh, man, I feel so stupid reading this book. I'll read a sentence, I'll go, huh? And I have to read it again, or I have to go ask my husband, I have to Google some words or whatever it is, right? And I'm like, oh man, I'm too dumb to read this book. and I In book club last week, we were talking about it actually, and talking about all the big words and how it's a book about debating, and how the I kind of reflected in during book club to say, I don't use big words in my questions. Like, I feel like I'm always that person that simplifies everything, or ask the simple question at the risk of it being stupid and dumb, but ask that simple question so that I can understand what the hell's going on. But it's an interesting, the whole the big word thing, and trying to make it make sense for you, but also just cut out the crap and let's just get to the punchline of the book or the conversation or the topic or whatever the hell it's about.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, you just explained that you feel like you might be dumb reading this book because there's so many big words and so many confusing concepts. Like, you don't want to be adding to the confusion when you're asking a question.
Yeah.
The concept is already confusing enough, which most of the time in, you know, the types of problems that we're trying to solve in the workplace, it is confusing enough. It doesn't need extra layers of confusion. It doesn't need people to think that you're super duper smart. It just actually needs more transparency and clarity.
Yeah.
And that's what a question can help. And I think the other thing about a question is it doesn't, you have to be careful how you say it. The, one of the terms, I think it was someone in my learning and development days, one of the people that used to come in and train us, she used the term quigestion, which is like asking a question, but it's actually a suggestion.
Right.
So it's a suggestion phrased as a question.
Right.
So, why don't we do blah, blah, blah might be a quigestion. And that's not going to get you the same impact as, you know, truly, can you help me understand something?
Yeah.
Because, you know, people, their feedback receptors go on straight away when you put why in front of
yes. And in coaching, we're taught or encouraged to not ask those why questions because they kind of sound like you're either grilling the person or you're trying to, what did you say, quigestion?
Quigestion.
Yes, it's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying, well, why haven't you tried this way? Yes, interesting. Quigestion. That's a good band name.
It is, actually. I might have to start that band in my later career.
So do you work with IT people now?
Well, I've actually just started a new role literally just this week, which is a practice lead role in the operations part of the business I work for. It's an insurance company. So digital solutions and operations work really closely together to, you know, manage the flow of the policies that we have coming in. And when I was Scrum Mastering, I was on the digital solution side, but I've now moved into the operations space and I'm a practice lead. So I'm going to really just be, I guess, supporting the individuals kind of develop and move, transition to agile ways of working to build their capabilities, figure out what their strengths are and kind of help them adapt to change. And mostly for me, my little secret mission on the side is to make sure that they really actually enjoy being at work and have a good time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the Scrum Master coming out in you. Are you practice of Scrum Masters? What practice are you practice lead for?
And no, I'm not actually. We don't have any Scrum Masters in this space.
Right,
so
okay.
I'm kind of going to be, I think, quasi Scrum Mastering a little bit as well.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah, and on the other side, the digital solution side, the practice lead does have the Scrum Masters reporting to him. Yeah.
Yeah. So, cool. Right.
Yeah. Kind of the lead Scrum Master.
Yes. Right. Because I was going to say, you would still be dealing with more technical people as an everyday, in your everyday conversations and stuff. So the art of asking simple questions, let's not say dumb, let's say they're simple questions, would be a good thing, because something that we're trying to encourage in our agile spaces is getting those technical people to be able to relate to and be able to speak to customers or the end exactly. users or whoever they are. So yeah. we've kind of been trying to lift that language so everyone speaks some kind of common language. So I think asking you being the person that has kind of come from more of a someone who can speak customer language, you're kind of that translator for the team through your questions.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because the people in my team now, the operations team, they are the users in a lot of situations from the platforms that the digital solutions team are building. So there's this real, like, they've got a language and then the digital solutions guys have a language and it doesn't correlate. And I think we've been doing really well as an organization in trying to build those relationships and get exposure on both sides so that both the users, the internal users, and the guys building the tools can understand what's going on. But it's insurance. It's pretty complex. There's, you know, like, I don't know, terms flying all over the place, lots of acronyms. And, you know, the guys that are doing the underwriting of these deals are like very technical, very, very, they've been doing it for a long time. They understand a lot about the area that we're looking at and, trying to kind of help them translate that to, you know, a junior developer who's like just joined insurance and has never worked in this space before. It is definitely the question, asking the right questions and making sure that you're kind of looking at them. Do they get it? Looking at them. Do they get it? Not sure. Let's ask another question and just see
if
you can kind of build that connection for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That sounds, I was going to say challenging, but also exciting.
It is exciting. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. And I think the other thing that I tend to, you know, like to move around, even though I was in HR for 12 years and I was at the same company that whole time. I moved into a few different roles. I think I had 5 roles in that time. And then I've done the Scrum Master for 2 years and now I'm doing this for 2 years. And I think that the reason I enjoy that is because it kind of lets you ask silly questions because you're new. So it's okay. You know, even if you are understanding things, you are allowed to be the person asking the questions and you know, having that sort of beginner's mindset where you're trying to understand what's going on and you don't really have any preconceived ideas.
Yep, definitely. And like I said at the start, the curiosity, you're demonstrating how to be curious and you kind of stay in that curious stance a lot as well, which again is something we're trying to instill in the teams that we're working with so that they also feel comfortable asking questions or, you know, get comfortable asking questions so that they can build their own understanding on their own one day.
Yeah. I used to do these user interviews in my previous role and we started to try and like the group that we were interviewing were quite important sort of business relationships as well. And also we wanted to, we were getting people from the business to come to the interviews because they were learning a lot from it. And then we decided that it would be really good to try and get the more senior people in the organization to come along to these user interviews.
Yeah.
And so I was in, and like they were all like really interested in doing it as well. And it was actually, really, you know, a good experience for everyone. But in one of them, the head of the banking, personal banking area sort of kept asking why? And we were talking about, we'd been asking brokers to use an iPad to identify people, like to verify their ID instead of in the past, they used to send it, you know, into us on they'd fax or, email a photocopy of it. And that was then having to be manually processed. So we wanted people to use this new digital thing that we had and we thought it was really cool and we created this digital bought something, I think, to like a digital way of getting people to use to verify their ID. And the personal banking, like the head of this area just kept kind of going, well, I just don't understand, like why are people, you know, not using it? And, you know, tell me about what you do and like where do you go? And then in the end, like he just kept asking why, which in this context, I think was the right thing to ask. He wasn't questioning. He was genuinely like, why? Yeah. Why? I don't get it. What are you doing? And then, using that five whys technique,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
And then we ended up finding out that, like, it was something as basic as, you know, when the brokers are having these conversations with individuals, they don't want to have, or she had to leave her phone upstairs so that if other customers were calling her, they would be answered by the receptionist. And she was downstairs meeting with the customer face to face. So she didn't have any technology with her. And so it then meant she had to go up the stairs to get it. And then, you know, that was one of the key reasons why this individual wasn't using this new technology. And it just I found it really interesting that if you had, you know, if he'd only asked one question, we would have just assumed that, you know, I don't know, what we would have assumed, that they would just be stuck in the mud and they didn't want to try new things. But the fact that we just, you know, he kept going and kept being curious and asking probably what she might have thought were a bit dumb questions from the, you know, senior lead head of this area. It actually did, you know, really create that understanding of what you are experiencing as a user. I always like that saying, assumption. What is it? Assumption creates an ass of you and me.
Yes. And I just use saying then around the head of that area not feeling comfortable asking the questions. It's really interesting how I've experienced that a bit myself recently, where you provide the space for people to ask questions, but it seems to be that some, you know, the more senior, they're kind of expected to know the answers already, so they feel even less comfortable asking questions than somebody on the team potentially. So they kind of just sit in silence and, I don't know, try and figure it out on their own or not do something that they're supposed to do, because they don't actually know what they're supposed to do, because they're not confident enough to ask the question, because they think they should know the answer to it already because of they're a leader.
And I mean, that can be really scary. It can have some really serious implications when you're a leader and you're making decisions and you don't actually really get it. But you're too, you know, you've got too much status or face to lose or whatever, and you don't want to ask. We've been going through something similar in the workplace I'm in at the moment, where luckily we do have people in the team, me and some other people, who were just like, really, do you understand? Let's just try this again. Let's make sure everyone really genuinely understands. But there's been some decisions made that probably came from no one asking the silly question.
Yeah, and those assumptions are really dangerous. Because it'll lead you down a path that's completely wrong. And it's interesting, the assumption part of it. It's interesting, you know, when I facilitate quite a few different kinds of workshops, and especially when you're in like a discovery phase of something new, it's amazing how many assumptions are made that people don't realize they're making. Like, they don't realize it's coming out of their mouth. And I'll be the person going, is that true? Or are you assuming that to be true? And they'll go, oh, no, I don't know actually if it's true or not. Like, okay, well, let's capture that as an assumption.
And
they fly around everywhere, the assumptions. They're just, you know, and people just don't realize that they're actually doing it. So, yes, it can create a lot of incorrect decisions or escalating the wrong thing or whatever it is.
Wasting time going around in a circle and not actually getting ahead and building something that's going to be valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. So what are you doing for your own professional growth, Sarah?
I have just taken on this new role, which I guess is a part of professional growth, is pushing yourself into new areas and trying new things. So I think that will be a big development for me in the next few months. My end game is to be a coach. Agile being one of the areas I'd like to be able to coach in, but you know, more broadly around different ways of working and how organizations can get the best out of their people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm planning on doing the Scrum Alliance Certified Agile Coach training at some point mm-hmm. when I get my head around this new job.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of kind of day-to-day, I do like to listen to what other people have to say. So, you know, listening to podcasts or learning from how other people experience things is probably the thing that I do the most. I'm kind of a bit obsessed with the, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast, the Scrum Master Toolbox with Vasco Duarte.
Yeah, I really like
that format because it's like 13 minutes and you can kind of get in the car and just listen to one. And then, so they're sort of short and sharp. And I think he usually interviews the same person over like 5 days. So you get five little kind of insights and he's got a different theme for each day.
Mm.
I try to kind of listen to how other people are experiencing things. And then Alex Lowley, who, you know, well, he is, I guess, still one of my main mentors and coaches. I try to get time with him as much as I can.
Mm. Beautiful. What final words of wisdom would you like to leave our listeners with?
Yes. I think I'd like to leave them with however you do it and whatever you call it. Asking questions is something that you should be really proud of, and it's something that brings value to other people in the organization as well. So if you're a good question asker, then note that down on your list of superpowers. If you don't feel comfortable asking questions or silly questions, then try to, you know, push yourself out of your comfort zone and just give it a try and see, you know, where it might take you.
Mm. Yep. Good advice. Love it. Thank you very much for your time today, Sarah. It's been awesome catching up with you.
No problems. Thanks, Renee. Really nice to talk to you.
See you.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Women in Agile podcast series. It is brought to you in partnership from the Women in Agile nonprofit and Scrum.org. We hope you've learned something new and invite you to tell a friend or a coworker about the podcast. Please go online to womeninagile.org to learn more about our initiative and find more inspiring podcast conversations.